This week on Painting Lines.
I'm kind of pissed here. Like, even though my bet hit, I still wanted Runa to win the match.
How crazy dominant Zverev was. He only lost 5 points in the whole match on his serve. I think if he wants to have more success overall, he needs to have tournaments where he gets one or two wins, not just no wins or wins the tournament.
Welcome to the Painting Lines podcast, your one-stop shop for all things tennis. Join Eric and Aiden in their discussion for updates on news and pop culture. And from hot takes to betting, they've got you covered.
Ready? Play.
Welcome back to Painting Lines. Last week, we discussed the career of Dominic Thiem. And this week, we'll be doing a recap of the Italian Open, which is the final Masters 1000 of the season on clay and leads us right into the French Open. So, Eric, this tournament gave us some unexpected results and an unexpected winner, I think. But just wanted to kick things off with, what was one big takeaway you had from the tournament overall?
Big takeaway? That Chileans can play tennis.
Didn't know that before.
Right. I know. It's two Chileans in the semifinals. Pretty interesting. But in all seriousness, my biggest takeaway was Zverev's ability to capitalize, because, you know, you didn't have the top three players, Alcaraz, Sinner, Djokovic, were all missing from the tournament. So it felt like it was kind of up in the air, it was up for grabs, or at least you would have thought that Tsitsipas or Ruud, with their recent clay success, you know, maybe one of them would win. But Zverev had a pretty easy route to the final. And I think, you know, he played Fritz in the quarters, you know, who's doing well on clay right now. And Tabilo was really the only person who pushed him in the semis. So I just think the fact that he's able to capitalize on an easy draw, because how many times do you really get that easy of a draw in a Masters 1000? Like, it doesn't happen often. So you might as well take advantage of it when you have the chance. And he did a good job at executing.
100%. I mean, of the previous 50 Masters 1000 events, only two times had there been a player where they won the whole tournament without having to play another top 10 opponent. And some funny examples actually of this happening are, if you look like Cam Norrie's run in Indian Wells 2021, he didn't even play really that anyone like super close. I think he maybe played the 11 guy, but just crushed him. And then he beat Basilashvili in the final. Pretty crazy to see those two guys in a Masters 1000 final. I don't think anybody expected that one going in. But actually, the crazier one is Jack Sock when he won in Paris in 2017. He only played one seeded opponent in the entire tournament, and it was the number 17 seed. So, yeah, these are guys that sometimes you get your chance, and if you seize it, you can get the Masters 1000.
Yeah, that Jack Sock stat. That Jack Sock stat is pretty interesting, because, you know, you always associate, oh, he won Paris. He won the Paris Masters. But you didn't really get into his route and how he won it. That's funny.
Yeah, so if we want to just kick it off here with the round of 128, it's kind of funny, because when you have a big tournament like this, sometimes the round of 128 kind of seems just like an extra round of qualifying, because all of the bigger guys – just get a bye to the round of 64. So the only real matchup that I thought was of note here was Nadal getting a win over Bergs. And while he had a scare when he lost his first set, he kind of just found his footing, got into the rhythm, and then won the match. And while there were some good matches between kind of lower ranked guys, there was nothing really massively noteworthy that I saw.
Yeah, that's pretty funny you said that. I feel like it's kind of that first round is the extra qualifiers. It's like when you're on varsity and the JV guys are playing the game before you and you're like casually watching them, kind of chilling out. Your game's not till later. So, yeah, I think that's kind of the same here.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I wonder who I'm going to play.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so really first massively like consequential round was that round of 64. First up, Djokovic, he's back. He kind of cruised over Moutet. It didn't really seem that close in that match, and it wasn't. So nothing really crazy there. Just wanted to mention that he got the win. And then really the first crazy match was Ruud when he lost his match, because he just completely disappeared. He won the first set 6-0 against Kecmanovic, and then just completely disappeared and lost the next two.
Yeah, I don't know how many times someone wins the first set 6-0 and then goes on to lose the match. That is pretty disappointing.
Yeah, I wonder if like you kind of get that situation where Kecmanovic is down and he's like, I'm just going to give up this first set. I'm just going to let him take it. And I'm just going to try in these next couple sets. And Rude continues to put in effort in that first set and isn't expecting Kecmanovic to kind of like step it up in those next couple sets.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's either that or Rude just came out flying 1-6-0 and was thinking, oh, I got this in the bag. Because I feel like that does happen, especially when you're playing a lesser opponent and you jump out that far ahead. And you basically are already thinking about what you're going to have for dinner later that night. That's, you're like, oh, I'll have this match done in 45 minutes. No problem.
Classic tortoise in the hare situation.
Yep, exactly.
Moving on another match we talked about actually last week in last week's episode was Struff versus Tsitsipas. Really was just a tough matchup. I wanted to bring it up again just because I want to emphasize that this was just such a bummer for Struff that he faced Tsitsipas this early in the tournament, because we've seen Struff. He won a tournament on clay earlier this year. He's had solid runs on clay, and yet he plays a really top clay player in the round of 64, eliminates him early, and just a bummer for him. And it was a tough match for Tsitsipas, but really just sucks for Struff.
Yeah, I agree. Talked about it last week on my match of the week. I love these two guys too. So it was just great hitting all around. And the fact that Struff, he has been playing well recently too, and to just get Tsitsipas at, luck of the draw. That's exactly where that expression comes from.
Yeah, or unluck of the draw.
Unluck of the draw.
And speaking on...
Kudos to Tsitsipas, though, for getting through Struff. That's also, not the opponent you want to see that early on.
Yeah, exactly. Not an easy match for him either. Mm-hmm. But speaking of unlucky draws, Nadal had to play Hurkacz in the second round. So similarly, a tough draw for him. And he kind of just got clobbered by Hurkacz. Like, it was not very close.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure Hurkacz took out Federer in his last Wimbledon too.
Yeah,
a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So this guy is just—he's
got the history of eliminating these guys.
I was going to say, in a couple of years, when Djokovic is towards the end, the tail end of his career, I think Hurkacz, if he's playing him, all my money's on Hurkacz.
He's going to beat him at like the U.S. Open, so that it's like he beat Federer on grass, Nadal on clay, Djokovic on hard.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, he's going to tell his kids he beat all the big three. Yeah, he's going to have a perfect record.
on their preferred surface, too.
On their surfaces, yeah.
But, moving on, round of 32. This was probably the big shock of the tournament, but it's funny because later on it kind of reflected differently, was Djokovic losing to Tabilo. And we talked about this last week with the water bottle incident. Djokovic may have had a concussion. But like I said, you look at how Tabilo ended up doing in the tournament, making it all the way to the semifinals, and you're like, okay, this loss isn't really as bad when you consider that Tabilo was able to go on, beat Khachanov, make the semis, push Zverev, who ended up winning the tournament. And overall, you have to say Tabilo was just – it wasn't like the loss to Nardi in Indian Wells, where Nardi, I think, just went on to lose the next round or maybe lost and then one of the next couple rounds. And it was just a crazy shock upset. Tabilo kind of showed, hey, it's a surprising loss for Djokovic, but I am still like a high level player. Like I performed at the level to beat him. It wasn't just that Djokovic played terribly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure after that win, he felt like he was on top of the world. Like, his confidence was just booming, and he played lights out the rest of the tournament. So I wonder how much of a confidence boost he got from that match. Like, if he in his heart knew that he beat Djokovic, despite the fact of the concussion or not, that he was still like, hey, I have the potential to win this tournament. You know, I basically took out the best player in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely has to be thinking that. And just beating someone, beating a current world number one, is always going to be a big accomplishment, no matter what situation they're in.
Yeah, I wonder if he had a pretty good matchup against Djokovic, just being a lefty on clay, and especially with Djokovic's head, you know, the ball is coming in at a different angle, different RPMs or different rotations. So maybe just that like little extra step too also threw off Djokovic.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, being concussed and seeing a shot you're not used to.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying concussed. We don't know for sure.
Yeah, but I know.
That's the assumption based on the way he talked about it. But anyway, moving on to the next match was Baez upsetting Rune and three sets. So nice bet of the week hit for Eric last week.
Boom.
Yeah, and I think it just showed that Baez has that top level quality on clay, because there have been times I think where Baez has shown that he can win these smaller clay tournaments, but hasn't necessarily performed as well on clay in like the Masters 1000 events. Mm-hmm. But here I think he showed that against Rune, who we know is a top level clay guy, he's like, I can compete with these highest level guys.
Yeah. So what do you think? This is more impressive for Baez or more disappointing for Rune? Because I'm kind of pissed here. Like, even though my bet hit, I still wanted Rune to win the match, because he is what I consider like the top of the game right now. And you know how I don't like when we have just tennis in flux right now, where, you know, we don't have consistent players. And I wanted Rune to be that guy to stay on the top, and he's just not doing it right now.
Yeah, and he's kind of sliding a little bit in the rankings too, I think. I think,
like, he has everything.
He just doesn't have that last little piece. I think we're looking for him to make that last step that Sinner made last year. Like, I'm sure there is a tweak to his game. Sinner made that tweak to his serve, and it just completely made him just like the best guy in the world, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think there is a tweak somewhere in Rune's game that will help him get to that level, whether it's a mindset shift, whether he just needs to think about, have a different thing that he's thinking about during the match. Because even if you have a good mindset, like confidence and stuff, sometimes you just have to be thinking like, oh, remember to rotate my hips on this shot or something like that. If you're just thinking about that one little change, maybe that can help you elevate your game. And I don't know what it is for Rune. I don't know all of his little quirks in his game, but I'm sure there's something that he needs to do. And we'll see if he's able to make that change at some point in the next year or so, or he's going to probably just continue sliding down a little bit in the rankings.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about this? So, you know how last week we talked about Dominic Thiem and we talked about his steady rise? What if Rune just kind of peaked too early, or not peaked too early, but he had too much success early on in his career where he didn't really earn or like warrant that? So maybe we are seeing the true Rune. Like, this is who he is, just a inconsistent, talented nonetheless, but just inconsistent player. And maybe we'll see.
I mean, maybe we're seeing what we saw from like FAA last year, where FAA explodes up and then he kind of slides back down. Rune did the same thing. I mean, obviously a slightly different time frame for Rune, but exploded up and is now kind of sliding down. But obviously FAA now kind of seems to be a little bit back on that upward trajectory. So the hope, I think, for Rune is that he doesn't have to fall as far down to before he can start going back up.
Yeah. But definitely big takeaway here is look out for Baez at the French Open. You know, I think serious contender.
Yeah. I think he's a serious contender. And I also think that we know how much a draw can impact how well you do. If he gets a good draw, he could make a really, really deep run.
Yeah.
But like I said, with FAA kind of on the rise now, he unfortunately did lose to Deminar in the round of 32. But I still think very solid match. It was my match of the week. And while I'll talk about it a little bit more later, I kind of want to mention that I think it's a positive for FAA. Even though he lost, I think it was a really tight match. Really good opponent in Deminar. And I think FAA needs to try to continue to get consistency in his results rather than just have these explosive moments. Because last year he had that win at the end of the year indoors, but that was like his only bright point. I think if he wants to have more success overall, he needs to have tournaments where he gets one or two wins, not just tournaments where he gets no wins or wins the tournament.
So he's making incremental progress.
Exactly.
So what is he ranked now? Do you remember? Is it?
I think he's like in the low 20s.
Low 20s. Okay. So like him making it to the round of 32 here, what is that? You know, I know you said that he's doing the incremental progress. You know, it's not bad, right? He can leave the tournament being like, okay, I got some more points. I won a couple matches. You know, this is good for him.
I think it's what I've talked about is like backing up your ranking in the tournament. It's like, mm-hmm. if you're in the top 32, you want to at least make it to the round of 32. So when you're at kind of the low 20s where I think he is, you're kind of at a point where it's like, if you make it to the round of 32, you're like, okay, I did what I was expected to, but you're hoping to make the round of 16 if you have like a decent matchup. Mm-hmm. And he didn't really get a great matchup here. Deminar, obviously very solid opponent, higher ranked mm-hmm. than him, but I still think that it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I feel like Deminar, if you're going to push a match to 3 hours, like you said, or over 3 hours, you don't want to do it against Deminar. Especially last week, you know, FAA kind of had fatigue and kind of leg cramping in the final. So you already know if he's going the distance right now, he's probably not used to it since he hasn't really played or he hasn't won too many matches in the past. So he's just kind of coming in. And he's not ready for those 3 hour matches. So,
yeah, you
know, someone like Deminar is just a machine out there.
Yeah. And I think Deminar is kind of just trying to force that bad situation. I think I'll talk about it when I get into my match of the week, but mm-hmm. Deminar was definitely trying to force rallies long, and FAA was trying to shorten them as much as possible. And when you look at how long the match went, you can kind of see who won that battle.
Yeah.
And then last matchup from the round of 32 I want to focus on is Rublev falling to Muller. So obviously both of the Madrid finalists out in this round. Mm. And when you see Rublev lose a match like this, I just am like, I don't understand you, Rublev. Like, he has this long period of not really doing well for a couple of months. Flash of just doing great, beating Alcaraz, winning the tournament. And then just another kind of poor performance. And you're like, what do we expect from you? Like, it's really tough to know what he's going to do in these tournaments.
I agree. I really thought after last week that we were going to see like the flip of Rublev and start to see him possibly compete for a Roland Garros title. But after this, I'm not too convinced. I'm just kind of going back to his streakiness.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. But so moving on to the round of 16, we had Tabilo backing up his win against Djokovic with a double tiebreak win over Khachanov, like I kind of mentioned earlier. And overall, I think just an impressive win over another top opponent. But I think you also kind of have to just feel bad for a loser in any double tiebreak match like this, because when you lose 7-6, 7-6, you were only a couple points away from winning the match. And instead, you lose in straight sets. So I just think it's a tough situation for Khachanov. But overall, I think an impressive win for Tabilo. And they had kind of a long tiebreak in that second set tiebreak too. So really a tight one there.
Yeah, that is the classic example of winning the points that count. Like, for example, you know, you have Djokovic who will win just over 50% of the points, like 51, 52%. But he wins the ones that matter. And I'm sure Khachanov is going back, kicking himself at, you know, some of the points where he maybe didn't try his hardest, or he was kind of like, oh, I'll let that one go. But no, that every single point counts here.
100%.
Especially when it's that close.
Yeah. And then the other Russian also goes out. The defending champ Medvedev got beaten by Tommy Paul in this round, and honestly got beaten pretty handedly. So looks like Tommy Paul's back from that ankle injury, right?
Yeah, this one I was pretty shocked, actually very shocked about, because I feel like Medvedev has a good matchup against Paul where he just kind of sits back and plays defense, whereas Tommy's a little more aggressive. And I think Medvedev just eats that up and is able to take pace off and cover a lot of court. But no, like you said, Paul beat him very handedly, and it looks like his ankle is, you know, pretty fine now.
Yeah, didn't Matthew McConaughey tweet about Tommy Paul?
Yeah, let's go.
Pretty cool to see.
I was going to say, it's great for the sport, especially because I've seen Matthew McConaughey at a final too in Djokovic's box. I'm not sure which one it was. Might have been Wimbledon, but No, you see, I've seen Tom Brady and I've seen Matthew McConaughey.
The celebrity tennis fans, always a positive. Just spread awareness of the sport.
Yes, exactly. And it's good celebrities too. Someone like Matthew McConaughey, stud.
Exactly. He's the best. Have you seen Interstellar? Dude, the best.
Yeah, it's one of the best movies. And then, just also good for American tennis too. Like, it's not like he's tweeting about, for example, like Tsitsipas. Tsitsipas also had a big game or a big match win that day.
Yeah, dude. I mean, Tsitsipas clobbered Demonar. Yeah. And I got to be honest, as a Demonar fan, I'm like, I got to be like, okay, he was tired, man. He just played a three-hour match the day before. But you also kind of have to give credit to just Tsitsipas' quality. Like, you don't beat someone that dominantly, I guess, without having a really high level.
Yeah, no, credit to him for sure. Because, yeah, I mean, for Demonar to get beat that bad, like, what?
Yeah.
That is surprising. Two pretty shocking results, I got to say.
100%. So moving on to the quarters, though. First up, we had a kind of odd matchup here, which was Tabilo versus Zhang. And we haven't really talked about Zhang's run, which is shocking for a guy that's in the quarters. But he kind of got an easy draw. Like, he beat Shelton and Manorino, who are good opponents, but they're not crazy. Like, you're not insanely shocked when you see them lose earlier on in the tournament. And then you see him come up against Tabilo, and kind of just a bread and butter win for Tabilo. Just got one break in each set, got it done, and you're like, okay, that was a weird matchup to see. That's like a matchup you would expect to see in the round of 64, and instead you're seeing it in the quarterfinal.
Yeah, Zhang just kind of flies under my radar. Like, I don't know why, but I kind of expect him to win. Like, because he's a good player. And when I saw him, you know, making his run, I was just kind of like, oh, yeah, I mean, it's Zhang.
Yeah.
I was not surprised. I don't know why.
Is it? Yeah. I mean, I think it's exactly what I said. Like, it kind of goes into what we expect from Manorino and Shelton, too. It's like, we're not shocked if they lose relatively early.
Yeah.
And so when you see them lose to Zhang, you're like, okay, Zhang's a good opponent. And they're not always the most consistent guys. And then he beat, I think, Montero, maybe.
Yeah, who's also, you know, been playing great tennis.
100%. But also isn't like the highest ranked guy.
Yeah. Pretty sure he's playing qualifiers right now for Roland Garros. I don't think he's top 100, right?
I'm not sure exactly what his ranking is, to be honest. Yeah. But then similarly, like in terms of score, we had Fritz versus Zverev, which like this match, I didn't really have any big commentary on it because it was a pretty bread and butter win for Zverev. Like, just got a couple breaks in the match and got it done.
Yeah, no, I know. I was hoping for a better match here. I'm not going to lie. I was excited. I don't know. I didn't know who I wanted. I know we were kind of talking about this before. Remember, you wanted Fritz. I kind of wanted Zverev. I feel like Zverev needed a win more than Fritz. Granted, Fritz definitely needs titles. But Zverev, I feel like out of that era, or out of the, like, him, Medvedev, and Tsitsipas and Rude, I just kind of wanted him to excel, like him to get a title again. It's been a while. And I think when he's at the top of his game, tennis is also more interesting, more fun.
Yeah. The funny thing is with Fritz is, while he does have his inconsistencies, he really does seem like the most kind of consistent American. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're looking in the quarterfinals of a tournament, it's like, who do you expect of the Americans to be there? It's definitely Fritz. But maybe Tommy Paul, based on how he's playing this year, can start to take over that title and maybe become the top American.
Yeah, no, Fritz, he just goes to work, man. He's consistent. He's collecting quarterfinal paychecks. Like, he's not winning titles, but he's making it deep. He's making semis, making titles.
It's a 9-to-5.
Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe he gets to spend some time in Rome with his girlfriend after.
Yeah, exactly.
Eat some good pizza, drink nice wine.
Exactly, for sure. And then another quarterfinal matchup was Jari versus Tsitsipas. And Jari beat him. He got these timely breaks in this match. He broke him at 6-5 in the second and 4-5 in the third. So it was a big win for him, where he came back and he got this win in this match with just knowing when he had to win the points and getting it done in those critical moments.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Tsitsipas's dad during this match, but I would have, if he wasn't my dad, I would have fired him, like get him out of the box. He was so negative and distracting, just not really encouraging. You know, I feel like you see it a lot with Tsitsipas and his dad, but this one was really, really evident. I don't know how he's going to keep going.
Yeah. I feel like you don't want that. You don't want that negative energy.
It's like
in
a
box.
Dude, masterclass on how not to treat your son who's a professional athlete.
Yeah. And how not to like help someone win a match.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Can't imagine those family dinners.
Exactly. He's like, yeah, well, if you had served out wide at 6'5".
Yeah. Dad, can you pass the chicken?
Yeah. Can you pass the chicken? No, I will. I can't do that motion. Like you couldn't do that motion in at 40-30 in the fourth set, whatever.
Only winners. Yeah. Oh, I think. Oh, there's also rumors he's kind of back with Paolo, so maybe that's what.
Critical news.
Just wanted to put that in there. Saw something on Twitter.
He was winning. He was winning until he got back with her.
Damn,
and that's why his dad's so pissed.
I know my Roland Garros futures bet isn't looking good as good anymore.
Exactly. But then, so the last quarterfinal was Paul versus Hurkacz. And this was really just an uncharacteristic match, I think, for these guys. There were 13 breaks of serve in this match. And there was this marathon final game where Hurkacz, who was down a break, he went up 40 love to break back. And he ended up having 6 break points in the game. But Paul ended up actually taking it on the fourth match point. So really just a tense moment there for Tommy Paul, but ended up getting it done.
Yeah, I feel like you see that. You don't see Hurkacz coming clutch in very like big moments. And I think that's kind of what's holding him back from taking his game to the next level. But yeah, kudos to Paul. I mean, that's huge. And that shows how he's able to hang in big moments too. Because, you know, a lot of players just fall apart.
100%. But yeah, so jumping into the semis, though, like you mentioned at the very beginning, we had this double Chilean semis, which it was the first time that's ever happened in a Masters 1000 event, which is pretty cool to see for that country. I mean, you get all the support of them on both players, I feel like. And the cool thing about it was that they were on opposite sides, so double the chance of a Chilean being in the final and the chance for there being a double Chilean final, which would have been really insane. So the match with Tabilo and Zverev, Tabilo jumped on him early, took the first set, really like dominated him in the first set. And then in the second, both players kind of just sat on their serve and it went to a tiebreak. And Zverev ended up winning the tiebreak, which I think kind of mentally affected Tabilo. Like he probably felt kind of like, oh, that was my best chance to win this match. And I think Zverev took advantage of that, went on to win the third at 6-2. Overall in this match, I think Tabilo should have been more aggressive in that second set and tried to get a break, I think, harder. I feel like I said, they kind of sat on their serves a little bit in the second set. And I think that's probably because Tabilo was like, hey, if I can just get it to a tiebreak, I have at least a much closer to 50-50 shot of winning this set in a tiebreak. And I think if he had tried maybe to kind of press the advantage when he was up and took that first set, he might have had a better chance of winning the match.
Yeah, I like that analysis. I think this kind of goes back to what we had previously mentioned before on other episodes. But if you are the, I don't want to say worst player, but like the lower ranked player, if you're the underdog, I think you have to take more chances. And like you said, be more aggressive in trying to break serve, because all things equal, you are not the better player. So if you try to kind of hang back, rely on your serve, like you in the long run, you will get beat. So I agree with you. I think you should have taken more chances here.
Yeah. I think in that second set, like you said, taking more chances was critical, because he also kind of allowed Zverev a chance to, even though obviously he was up, Tabilo had the first set and it goes to a tiebreak and there's pressure on Zverev. But now after 6 games of holding his serve, Zverev has kind of regained some confidence and has kind of settled into the match a lot more than he was after he got dominated in that first set.
Yeah, he's in a groove. This also goes back to my hypothesis that whoever wins the second set tiebreak wins the match. I know it's not fully proven yet, but it's
yeah.
I'm gonna get some stats here sooner
I think
or later.
There's the funny thing is when we talk about that kind of hypothesis, it's like half the time we're saying it's disproven and half the time it's proven.
I know. I got to go back and just see like if it's over 50%, then I'll be happy.
Yeah.
50%. But no, this was 51%
yeah, exactly.
of the time if you win the second set tiebreak. But no, dude, great match. I actually caught this in the airport right after my flight landed. I was waiting for my parents to get in because I was meeting them, and I was watching on my iPad, and it was one of those where if you're walking by and I'm just staring at my iPad and you're hearing like, yes, no, go for it. Like I was in that match. It was so tense.
Yeah.
Tabilo is dangerous on the run, man. He is so good with that slap forehand.
Yeah. Pretty scary.
Yeah, he's exciting, but good run for him. Comes to an end.
Yeah, unfortunate that it comes to an end, but glad that it happened. What's that saying? Something like that.
Yeah, be happy that
I don't remember.
Happy that it happened, not sad that it's over. Maybe.
Exactly. Yeah. Something along those lines.
Yeah, hope you guys feel free to comment.
Exactly. But moving on to the second semifinal, Jari versus Paul. So first set, pretty standard, one break goes Jari's way. And then he goes up a break in the second. It kind of looked like it was trending towards him beating Paul pretty standardly. But then at 4-2, Tommy battles back, ends up taking the set in a tie break. And in the third set, again, Jari goes up a break on serve. And Tommy, once again, he just refuses to give up a 5-3. And has this tough final game with Jari. Jari ends up going up 40-love. Tommy battles back, ends up getting two breakpoint chances. In the end, can't get it done, but really shows that Tommy Paul is not ever willing to be like, oh, I'm down 40-love, this game's over. He's like, no. I'm going to battle every single point.
Yeah, he's a grinder. I wonder if it's one of those, like, because he has that Deminar athleticism, where you can be less talented but more scrappy or scrappier and still get the same results. Does that make sense? Like you can kind of compensate for lack of skill with your scrappiness and just straight grit and determination.
I mean, remember when Gil was on and he talked about how the comparison between Taylor Fritz and Tommy Paul is Tommy Paul has like the highest level athleticism. He has the top five player level of athleticism, just doesn't have necessarily the racket skills to be a top 10, top five guy. Whereas Fritz doesn't necessarily have that same athleticism, but he has incredible racket ability that lets him get into those top level situations and be in the top 10 maybe. So yeah, I think like you said, I think Tommy Paul kind of compensates for maybe not being as skillful by being more athletic than his opponent.
Yeah, Fritz does definitely not have the athletic ability, but all in all, good run for Tommy. I think if you're leaving this tournament, you're pretty satisfied. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, good run. I think it's one of those situations where he's like, I've been in these situations before. I've made solid runs at tournaments. I think he's looking for a win at a big tournament. He still doesn't have that.
Yeah. Would have been good going into Roland Garros too. Just that confidence.
Yeah.
All right. Well, he's a junior Roland Garros champion. So we'll see if he can get the real one done.
100%. But let's jump into this final. So Zverev versus Jari. So the one big standout in this match was just how crazy dominant Zverev was on his serve. So just to throw some stats at you on the top here, he only lost 5 points in the whole match on his serve. He won 90% of the points on his serve. One of those points was a double fault too. So of the serves that he got them in, he lost only four. And I just think this is a situation where you're like, how do you beat a guy when you only really win like 4 to 5 points on their serve in the entire match? That's not even enough points to break two games and win this, but just crazy dominant.
Yeah, it was. I also caught this in the car on the way to the airport, watching on my phone. And it was just every single game Zverev, or every single service game Zverev was playing. It was basically he was winning to love. And then Jarry was having to fight each service game, you know, going to deuce. And it was just, I kind of knew Zverev had it. It was, like you said, just pure domination.
Yeah, you saw the first few games of this match and you're like, okay, this seems like kind of a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, so I had actually, I made a bet that it was going to go over 2.5 sets. My rationale was that you have two big servers. It's going to be quick, not quick, but I think each set, like if one of them were to just get one break, that's all they needed. And I thought one of them would end up getting a break each set, but Zverev just, there were no opportunities for Jarry to even come close to breaking his serve.
Yeah, he got to 30 one game on Zverev's serve, but that was the closest he got.
Yeah, I think this match was what you is like the modern day equivalent of serve and volley, where like you have someone like a Sampras who has a very dominant serve and finishes at the net, but instead you have Zverev who has the dominant serve who finishes at the service line with a big ground stroke.
Yeah, just hits that
like
one,
all you
two.
Need is exactly the 1-2.
Yeah, and Zverev also broke kind of just at the critical points in this match. Like he broke at 4-5 in the first set, and he actually had two break points at 4-5 in the second set too. Ended up breaking at 5-6. So he knew when to push that extra little bit just to get it done too.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about his sense of humor, where when he was doing his victory speech, he got the trophy, he's like, "Hi, my name is Yannick. Just kidding."
Yeah. The funniest part I think about that was that there was the guy like next to him correcting his Italian.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, you should have practiced the Italian a little bit more.
Hey, maybe you didn't know he was going to win.
Yeah, I guess.
The hotel room the night before, like, shit, what if I actually win this thing? I got to give a speech.
Buongiorno, mio nome is Yannick Sinner.
Yo, damn, that was pretty fire.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like 600 days Italian Duolingo, man.
Oh, that is awesome. But great to see Zverev get a Masters 1000s title, because it's been a couple of years. It's been a few years, actually.
First one since 2021.
Yeah, and just having him, seeing him with the champagne, spraying it on his dad, just celebrating. That's what I want to see. I want to see Zverev back on top.
Yeah. It definitely a positive for him. But speaking of positives for him, moves up to number 4 in the rankings now. And a cool thing is that he's actually number 2 now for 2024's year-to-date rankings.
Whoa.
So that's a pretty big deal. I mean, speaking on the year-to-date rankings, another thing I noticed, didn't really focus on, but Tabilo is actually ranked higher than Djokovic in the year-to-date rankings, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Djokovic, you got to play matches to get rankings.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And another thing about this win for Zverev, he's now in the top 10 for the most Masters 1000 singles titles. He's tied for 9th with Medvedev at 6 titles. And the interesting thing about this is he's the only person in the top 10 that hasn't won a singles Grand Slam. Going from this, you're like, okay, is he one of the favorites for Roland Garros now? Like, obviously, he's shown that he can play pretty well. Even though he had kind of a lucky draw, is he maybe one of the favorites for the French Open? And I think about this, this is one of the first times in a long time where I feel like there's a handful of guys that can win it. Like, for the however long it's been maybe one or two guys where you're like, okay, it's Djokovic, it's Nadal that are going to win this tournament. And now it's like, okay, you have Sinner and Alcaraz. They're really looking like the top two guys in the world, but kind of got health concerns. Are they going to be healthy for this tournament? Djokovic, does he still have it? He hasn't really shown that much this year since, obviously, he's made a couple big runs, but he's also had some pretty bad losses, if you count Tabilo as a bad loss. You go look at Tsitsipas and Ruud. Do they have the consistency? They've shown that they have this high-level ability on clay, but then they also don't necessarily maintain that same level. So there's questions there. And then Zverev. I think with Zverev, it's just going to come down to his serve and his confidence. If Zverev can serve like he did in this final, he's going to be really hard to beat at Roland Garros.
Yeah, it's a complete toss-up here. But I kind of like Zverev going in. I feel like this tournament gave him the confidence too. And I unfortunately don't have much confidence in Sinner and Alcaraz. I do think that those are pretty serious health concerns that we're dealing with. You know, Sinner with the hip, that's nothing to really joke around with. And then Alcaraz's forearm, that could flare up within one miss hit or one, you know, one angle that doesn't go your way. So I don't know, man. I feel like, yeah, like you said, it's just the top players are kind of in question.
100%, 100%. Mm-hmm.
But going back to this final here, what is your takeaway on Jerry? You know, you saw him. I feel like he thought that he made it too far to not win. You know, like he got to that point. He broke down in his speech. He cried. He probably thought like, damn, this was mine for the taking. I think he leaves here, or he should leave, with his head high, you know, runner up of a Masters 1000.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes we forget that Jari has also kind of been back on the rise, because obviously he had that whole suspension. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have dealt with something like that and you've dealt with the lows, getting so close to achieving the massive high like this, it's an emotional thing for you, not just like a career-wise thing. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're that emotionally invested, it can be tough. That's just how sports are. I think mm-hmm. every player is so emotionally invested in the sport. It's not just a job. It's more than that.
Yeah. And I do like the fact that you see him break down and cry when he gets second place, because you have someone like Rude who loses 3 Grand Slam finals and is like cracking jokes up there on the stand. Like, dude, get pissed that you lost. Have some fire.
Yeah. I also think, though, it's like, that's just a different way of dealing with it. Like, I don't think Rude doesn't care. I think he cares a lot. I think he just, his way of dealing with it is kind of putting on this sort of facade of, uh-huh. All right, it's okay. It's how it goes. Someone has to be the loser. Uh-huh. I'll make some jokes when I'm up there. But I think in his head, he's pretty broken up about it.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Should we get into segments?
That sounds good to me. What's new in tennis? What'd you see this week?
I got some more drama for you guys. Some more relationship stuff. So,
oh, my favorite.
I know, right? Someone's got to fill the listeners in. But we have Jannik Sinner, Anna Kalinskaya dating rumors. I don't know if you know who she is, but she's WTA player. And I'll get into why it's a big deal in a couple of seconds. But there were rumors, you know, that they were dating. Sinner kind of keeps a low profile. He's not like Tsitsipas, where he dates a girl and then makes a joint Instagram and posts a bunch of pictures and like sits in her box and vice versa. But on Twitter, or X, formerly Twitter, a fan super zoomed in on a picture that another fan had taken with Jannik Sinner. And you can see on Sinner's phone, he was on the phone with Anna. Like, it just says Anna. So people are like, oh, confirm that they're dating, you know, confirm. But anyway, it is a big deal because this girl, Anna, used to date Nick Kyrgios. And that relationship did not end well. You know, she went on Instagram Live basically saying, oh, you think you're the bad boy of tennis? You're just a bad person in general. So, yeah. And then it's also funny because you have Nick Kyrgios, who taunted Wawrinka in a match, saying like, oh, Kokkinakis effed your girl, who at the time Wawrinka was dating another WTA player that I guess Kokkinakis had previous relations with.
Jesus. And
so now people are joking on Twitter that Sinner's like, hey, mate, I effed your girl, Kyrgios.
That's crazy. That's insane. Imagine it's just some other Anna. It's like, oh, I'm actually on the phone with like my physio, Anna.
Right? I know. But yeah, some juicy what's news for
people. People always want to jump to conclusions about this type of stuff. But
yeah,
I think there's no point in prying into someone's personal life. But if they're dating, it will become public soon enough. Why do people have to care about when it's still private? Right.
Yeah, no, I agree. Imagine just trying to live your life. You can't even talk on the phone with someone without being exposed on Twitter.
Exactly. Exactly.
But what about you? What did you see this week?
So one thing I saw was that Djokovic is actually playing in the Geneva Open this week in the build-up to the French Open, which is his first ATP 250 in over a year. And with him added to this tournament, it kind of makes a surprisingly strong draw for a 250. You got Djokovic, Ruud, Fritz, Shelton, and Baez all in this tournament. So I think not going to be just like an easy, everyone's going to roll over and let Djokovic destroy them and win this tournament. I think Djokovic wants to use this tournament as kind of a builder of confidence going into the French, but I think to an extent it could backfire. Like, he could lose an early match and be like, I really now have no confidence going into the French, because when you lose it on the biggest stage, it's like, okay, the bright lights, whatever, there, it's less of a big deal. It's like you were playing the highest level of tournament. Now it's like, even though it's a strong draw, it's not the highest level of tournament. And so if he loses early, you're kind of like, dude, what's going on?
Yeah. I don't know if I like this move on as far. It's risky, like you said, but
yeah, I think he just feels like he needs the tune up, because obviously,
yeah, he does.
He wants to kind of get his feel back, because obviously he said he wasn't feeling like himself in that match against Tabilo.
Right. I'm sure his game plan was to win Rome, or at least make it deep in Rome, and then take the week off going into Roland Garros. But since he lost last week, he's already taken a week off. He, like you said, he needs to tune up. He needs to start playing. So I think it's either this or Lyon is the only other option, right?
Unless yeah.
You take off.
Exactly. Huh. Exactly.
All right.
How about bet of the week? What'd you go for this week?
The bet of the week, I took Cebucci Vild, the Brazilian, Thiago, -135 over Pedro Martinez. So this was kind of one. I'm a little confused why Sabo Wild is the favorite, because Pedro is ranked higher. I think it's only because Sabo Wild, the last time they had played, he won. So he has a 1-0 head-to-head record. But that was in a challenger. That was in Como. I just like Sabo Wild and how he plays. And I think he's got a good matchup against Martinez, because Sabo Wild's pretty aggressive. Martinez isn't. And I think here in like an early round of a, you know, pretty just an ATP 250, that you kind of take as many chances. And I think even though he will make a lot of errors, I think that the risks will be worth the reward here. So going with the Brazil.
Sounds good. Sounds good. I don't know that much about Martinez, but I think they say both Wild definitely has a high peak level. And I always think that's a good bet to go for the guy that has the known high peak.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And my bet of the week. Yeah. I'm taking an exception. I usually always go the underdog bet, but this week I saw that our boy Alafi Ayeni, who we had on the podcast, is playing in the main draw of the challenger in Kakreti in Georgia. And he's playing this guy, Robert Strombach, and he's -105 right now. He's actually still the underdog, but it's like so close in terms of matchup that he's -105. But I remember Alafi actually told us a funny story when he was on the pod about playing this guy before and had some drama with him in the match, but he ended up winning that match. And so I think Alafi has kind of got the mental advantage. He beat him last time. And so I think he gets it done.
Yeah, that's awesome. Why don't you tell that story briefly?
I mean, I don't remember all the details, but I do remember Alafi like had to take a bathroom break and had to like sprint off the court to get to the bathroom in like 60 seconds. And then this guy was like complaining about it. And then Alafi ended up coming back and winning the match. So that's what I remember of it. But I remember they had some contentious moments.
Hey, man, tennis is not just played on the court.
Yeah, exactly. It's played in the mind.
He owns some real estate in Strombach's mind. Exactly. But yeah, hopefully our boy Alafia gets a big win here.
That'd be sick. Yeah.
Definitely rooting for him.
But yeah, so moving on to match of the week. So what'd you go for match of the week this week?
Yeah, so I went with the Jari beating Paul match. We touched on it earlier on, but yeah, 6-3, 6-7, 6-3. So these are two of my favorite players on tour. So of course, this is going to be, you know, my classic match of the week. And Tommy had the shot of the tournament here. So it came when he was down 2-4 in the second set. And Jari was just hitting punishing forehands, hit one to the deuce side of the court. So Tommy had to shovel this forehand out, you know, barely made it, sliding. And then Jari followed it up with what should have been a put-away volley to the ad side of the court. But Tommy ended up sprinting over there and hitting a one-handed backhand passing shot on the run that even got Jari's applause, where he just stopped, stared at it go down the line, and then just gave him a clap, which I always love to see players give other players kind of like the recognition and respect when they hit a notable shot. And I think that's just beautiful. It's when tennis becomes art. Like, I think Tennis TV posted something about it, and it's just like, dude, it is beautiful watching that. So very entertaining match. I don't need to go into specifics here because we covered it before, but both players, super athletic, got to show their, amazing ability. Both are really good at the net. And I feel like not only in the aggressive position, but also defensively. I feel like Jari's sneaky athletic for being how big he is, you know? Mm-hmm. All in all, just great match, very entertaining. And
100%. Yeah, and that one-handed backhand, I think it's so cool to see a shot like that because it just shows that improvisation on the mm-hmm. court, where it's like he would never plan to hit a low one-handed backhand up the line like that on the full sprint. Yeah. But he had that situation. And he was like, what's the best way I can deal with this shot? And it was like not even like it wasn't a slice one-hander. No. It was kind of topspin. It was just kind of like a punch one-hander. And he just got it right up the line, got it past him. It was, beautiful to see.
Yeah, it's one of those shots where you can't, if you try with two hands, you're not going to reach it. So you have to go one hand. It's exactly. Kind of like J.J. Wolf in Miami a couple years ago when he hit a lefty passing shot, lefty forehand, just because you can get it, couldn't get two hands on it. But it's a shot you don't practice that, right? Like there's no way, like you said, that was just instinct. He had to do what he had to do.
Exactly.
What about your match of the week?
So my match of the week, like I mentioned, Deminar beating FAA. The score was 6-7, 6-4, 6-4. And so first set, FAA just came out of the gates hot, broke it love in the first game and got an early lead. Deminar ended up breaking back but ended up losing in a tiebreak. Pretty standard second set. Deminar won by a break. But what you kind of saw as that second set went on, that he was kind of slowly breaking FAA down. And this was one of my overall takeaways from the match, is what you kind of started to see here, which was that you had one guy in this match, FAA, who was really trying to shorten the points because that's just how FAA plays. He's very aggressive. Mm-hmm. He tries to win points quickly, hits the crap out of the ball. And on the other side, you have Deminar, who's like, I'm just going to try to drag these points out as long as possible and make you, even if you win the point, it's going to be tough for you. And I think Deminar just slowly started to find more and more success in the second set. And then in the final set, actually, Deminar broke early in the final set, made it 3-1. All of a sudden, FAA gets this momentum out of nowhere, wins 8 points in a row, ties it 3-3. But then at 4-4, he ended up double faulting the breakaway, and Deminar ended up taking the next game and the match. And this was a big point, actually, in the match because FAA's serve really let him down this match. It was like the opposite of Zverev's serve, which was just really dominant. FAA ended up having 13 double faults in this match, which is just really, you can't win a match when you have 13 double faults. That's terrible. It's crazy how close he got with having that many double faults.
Wow. 13 double faults.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts to see that.
Oh my God. I wonder if that's something broke down in his mechanics or that's just pure mental. I feel like double faults are all mental.
I think so, because you know how to hit a serve.
Right, exactly. And even if you're just kick serving a second, spinning it in, you should be able to do that. Yeah. But I wonder if Deminar's tactics, like you said, he likes to wear down opponents. If that's going to be sustainable in a Grand Slam five-set setting, I could see him early on in the rounds, like trying to be more aggressive end matches earlier. But then as you get later on, when he's playing better players, then he can switch back to like, I'm going to wear this guy down, because that's what he does best. Like, he has the stamina to do that. Him and Medvedev do it the best. And you could see, I don't know if it was sustainable for Medvedev in the Australian Open. Remember,
Yeah, but remember in the US Open, they actually played each other, and Demonar got that first set, and then Medvedev just kind of settled in and beat him in
four. Yeah, but I'm curious to see this Grand Slam from this Roland Garros, how many hours Medvedev will spend on court, because remember he was playing like five sets every match.
Yeah, he's going to win like – he's going to play like two matches, and it's going to be like the most time on court in the tournament.
Yeah, because this is clay season two, so I think the matches tend to be a little longer, right?
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
All right, and that's the show. If you're not already subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube at Painting Lines Podcast. Feel free to shoot us a DM or email us any questions or thoughts at paintinglinespodcast@gmail.com.